is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good afternoon, Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2 here at WVNJ. 1160 AM, The Voice, broadcast over here in Teaneck and boomed out there in Oakland. And I say hello to my friends in Oakland who are going through a difficult period from the Ramapo. Excuse me. Been breathing in a lot of things in the last week, 2 weeks, with this the basements and the homes that get flooded out. I just want to say, I'm constantly out there. I'll be going out there after the show, continuing working, try to get these people's lives back in order. Last week, Terry Winters, a liaison to the FEMA, used to be in New York City OEM department, he's commented on, he's on the comment page, it's drhradio.net, drhradio.net, and he's got some numbers up there, if anybody didn't catch it last week, you can go there. It's for assistance during Irene. Irene is still, the damage is still very, very in the forefront, of the news, in my world also, obviously. So check out the website, drhradio.net, and there's the comment page with Terry, and he's got these the numbers you can call for assistance. FEMA's out there. That was really the premise of the show, is to let everyone know that FEMA wants this information out there so you can get assistance. I've done it with, at least 24 people. People have been trying to help out that are underinsured or not covered, or they've hit their cap. There's some pump failure / sewage, whatever the rider reads in their insurance policies. These storms are there is sometimes silver linings because people say, you know what, I'm not going to catch off guard the next time. People get those phone numbers and have they deal with their basements and their garages and some people are reevaluating their neighborhoods. My heart goes out to these people. It's devastating. Whole homes that are still underwater out there in the Passaic that I'll be visiting sometime later on today after the Oakland. And FEMA also wants us to get out. I got some information the last couple of days. If you didn't dry out your space, you might want to call a company, any professional company like mine, but I'm not plugging me, but as much as call a company that does professional drying. FEMA is very worried about the mold growth. People that are who are uninsured or aren't very proactive. The amount of water this time of year, we have, there's been a very high humidity levels of all of August going right into the September. So mold growth really enjoys that, really populates rather quickly. So you got to stay on top of that. I mean, call somebody, remove any suspect wet building materials. You know what? I'm repeating myself, but I'm seeing homes still that are devastated now. That's past the flooding and the water damage. Now it's the mold growth. I got some apartments over here in Bergen County, 16 of them. They're heavily impacted now with mold because you got to get these things out. You just can't let it fester. And Bruce Wolf of Garden State Environmental, he's a certified hygienist, CIH, if you will, and he's on some properties that I've recommended it to him, and it's getting more on the emergency side of it now. It's not just a little bit of drywall or moldings. It's creeping up these people's walls, and it gets secondary damage, goes onto your personal property. Even in your upstairs, if it's not affected with water, it still gets affected through spores and such like that. So be on the lookout. Excuse me, I got a little something going on in my throat here. Just keeping ahead of this cold I think I got from, again, breathing all that stuff in. With that said, we have a good show today. Jeremy Gruber is going to be on. I met him a couple of weeks ago, actually the day before the earthquake in D.C. I was down there on a meeting, and he's a retired professional firefighter, and now he's part of a group called Rescue One, and it's going to be interesting. And then the second part of the program, we're going to have the returning guest of Jerry Giesinger from the Disaster Academy down there at Service Master Land in Memphis, Tennessee. Jerry worked, was instrumental in coordinating our parent company, the Service Master Guys of the D.C. area, with the Pentagon cleanup. So I want to get his spin on that. And you know, we're gonna any questions? drhradio.net, drhradio.net. Comment, and you know, if I can be of assistance, if I can direct you, push you in a certain direction of your questions. If I don't have those answers, feel free to which drhradio.net. It seems like I'm speaking a little too fast. Is that right, Bill? Am I going a little too fast? Bill's giving me a thumbs up. Let's I want to talk about something. I got I get a list of kind of like public service announcements, and I use the radio for those announcements. This is really off the beaten track, but it's really amazing what people are doing in times of our economic issues with people and multiple jobs and no jobs. But I don't know if people know about the 112 cell numbers. Now that number, you dial that number, you should be able to get to any state police dispatcher. And because this incident that happened not too far away, I'm not going to be specific about where it was located, but a woman had been pulled or was attempted to get pulled over by an unmarked police vehicle with a red light, yada yada yada, and she was prepared. Her parents had prepped her on this. Again, you know, disaster recovery hour, property, you know, all these things that we talk about here. But this is very relevant. So she knew about the 112 number, and she wasn't going to be just pulled over on the side of the road by this unmarked police vehicle. And so she called the 112, and dispatch sent out four patrols, and they wound up surrounding her and the unmarked vehicle. And the guy in the vehicle, in the unmarked vehicle, was a convicted rapist and various other crimes. And it's amazing what people are doing out there when, you know, insignificant little thing like that, and it's really got there's a bigger picture to it. So with that said, we're gonna go to an early station break, but keep that in mind. 112, every dispatch for state police, we'll pick up and you know, assist you in whatever you got to whatever your concerns are. But let's go to an early station break, and I'll be right back.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877 772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
That's the cue. We're back, Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Every Tuesday between 1 and 2 here at WVNJ 1160 AM, The Voice. My first guest today is Jeremy Groomer. Let me set this up that the day before the earthquake last month, I was down in D.C. on a meeting with a mutual friend of ours, starting Crisis Logic. It's a new endeavor with a bunch of us trying to get, again, more consulting and getting the word out about preparedness. But I met Jerry Gruber down there. He's a friend of Chris Green, who's been on the show several times. And Jeremy was a 20-year vet, a fire professional at the Montgomery County down there in Maryland. Correct, right, Jerry?
That's correct, Montgomery County Fire Rescue Service. Yeah.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And I know you're busy with the Rescue One, which is your primary job, along with the restaurant. It's a great story. I'm gonna tell, or you can tell it about the restaurant. But I was introduced to Jerry's the guy I was just thinking about down at the Service Academy. But I was introduced to Jeremy, and by Chris Green, and then Chris said, Chris has a radio show up in the New York City area, and it's called Disaster Recovery Area. And Jeremy just went right out and said, "I'll tell you what a disaster is." And what did you tell me?
We're talking about cardiac arrest, because it doesn't get a lot of attention out there.
Right, last year we had Dr. Archie. He's a cardiologist up here in New York, and he's a consultant for the NFL. We talked about, it was really along the lines of diabetes. We didn't really touch about the heart. And I was thinking about, like first responders, for example. You guys, you guys have heart attacks on the job. So I thought this would be a great topic to talk about. Again, it's preparedness, and it really ties into a bunch of things because will you prepare for a hurricane or earthquake preparedness or things like that? Every day people are dropping dead from heart attacks, and I'm sure that you have stats of the minutes that are the critical minutes. But let's talk about what you do like say for a day job. You have Rescue One. Why don't you tell what Rescue One is?
Being in the fire department for close to 25 years, I recognized that the people that had training or that had taken some preparation and were prepared with having a plan in place or having an AED on site, those people seemed to do better in situations where there was a cardiac emergency or even a medical emergency because they had knowledge and some skill to work with the event. Since I started placing AEDs back in the mid-90s, I placed one device and had one use, and now in 2011, I have approximately 50 to 60 uses a year of the devices that I have out there, and we're seeing about 50 to 60% of those people that have a device placed on them being able to be resuscitated because of the timeliness of what an AED does. Because when someone collapses and goes into cardiac arrest, the heart stops pumping blood properly, whether the heart's going too quick or erratically acting chaotic. And if someone can be treat it with an AED, which is very simple to use, they will have a higher incidence of being resuscitated. So if an AED is used in the first couple of minutes, the chance of survival is approximately 80%, as opposed to waiting for a typical fire and rescue response where it's anywhere from 6 to 10 minutes and you've lost about 60 to 80% of the chance of actually saving that person, all because the electricity is what fixes that chaos. And the more chaos there is, there's more to fix. As the chaos decreases, and the inability to fix the problem becomes very evident. And as they go flatline, where there's no electrical activity, there's really not too much of a chance of saving that person because we're not fixing what's not there. We're fixing what's not working correctly, and that's where the AED comes into place when it's used in a very timely fashion.
AED stands for what again?
It's an automated external defibrillator.
Okay. Now, some of my history. I've been looking at the website, which Bill will have up on our website, so they'll be able to click and check out some of your videos. You got some cool videos on there too. Now, I shouldn't say cool videos, but very hands-on videos of it, of average Joe citizen or Mary citizen or whatever, learning the preparedness, the tools that could save a coworker or a teacher or a kid on a football field. And these are the things, these are happening every single day, every minute of the day, actually. And so coming from the first responder, the 20-some-odd years of being a fireman, and you've seen plenty, including the 9/11, there's got to be, it sounds like there's just a lot of passion behind this drive.
Well, absolutely. I think from what I've seen, and being, as I am a healthcare professional outside of the fire department as a respiratory therapist, in hospital and at a hospital, it's really somebody recognizing there's an issue and dealing with it in a very timely fashion when minutes and seconds count. So it's really being observant and providing some type of care to somebody who is in that critical state, and that few minutes makes all the difference in the world.
You know, a couple, I think it was about 20 years ago, my father was at his holiday party. He worked at some bank out west, but he had cardiac arrest, and there was a nurse, one of the coworkers' wives was a nurse, and they were able to bring him back a few times before the ambulance got a hold of him and brought him back. But is that a rarity for people to have this knowledge? I mean, what are the percentages of people walking around that could do that?
Well, obviously, your healthcare professionals and your public safety officers. And then people who have it for needs for jobs, for daycare, and things of that nature. So more and more people are becoming aware and are getting trained, but it's through shows like yourself that bring awareness up and allow people to understand that it really is important to get the training and to be knowledgeable, because when something does happen, it's no different than having a smoke detector in your house and having that smoke detector go off when your house is filling with smoke in the middle of the night and it wakes you up, or having that airbag in your car, or having that fire extinguisher at a ready, or that life preserver for the boat if you're out boating. Mm-hmm. Just one of those safety features that when it's needed, it's needed.
Is it, you know, with our economic times, you know, you got firehouses being closed, you got police being laid off, volunteer fire departments and ambulance corps are depleted. They're getting the stipends for, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month, and so the volunteer part of it is even being stretched thin. I know up in my area, they're always asking for volunteers. I actually took three semesters of first aid in college, so I got a little working knowledge, but I actually really need to get back and do that myself. Go up to the academy. I was in, you reminded me of it. I looked at the academy schedule. It looks like I'll be up there in January to get a little more information on CPR. And I talk about it to my wife and to my kids. My wife's a school teacher. Those are the types of folks. Those people who are teaching, or they have numerous employees. Those are the people you're directing your info to, correct?
Well, we're seeing a little bit of everybody. I mean, we work with the local governments and the federal government and daycare centers and places of worship. Everyone is a candidate to learn this, because you never know when something's going to happen. So corporations should, you know, provide the training and knowledge and equipment for their work sites, and individuals should take this for themselves to know what to do at home. And then just out and about, when these people are trained and things happen, there's more people able to respond and provide some type of care until professionals can arrive on the scene.
Now, just for our listeners' purpose, Montgomery County is very similar to in the distance from Montgomery County, or get over to D.C., so I'm trying to get my listeners to understand. It's just like if it's Nassau or Suffolk to New York City, or Westchester County to New York City.
We border D.C., we're right on the line, so we have jurisdiction with D.C. Actually, we respond into D.C., and D.C. occasionally responds into Montgomery County, so we share a border for about probably about 15 miles to the Potomac River. So you have Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Arlington County, Fairfax County, and Alexandria that sort of surround Washington, and we're on the north side of Washington, D.C., with a population of over a million.
Now, tell me... what the products that are on the website. There's physical products. Is it is a combination of both physical or also the schooling, the training? Is that the driving force?
On our website, it covers training. It talks about products, and it talks about the commitment and passion about people learning and how to provide this emergency care when something does happen. It's a good resource for information, and it provides our information for people to be able to get in contact with us who would like to set up a program or is in need of a donation. We just last week donated 62 AEDs to one of the counties next to our county, to Frederick County Schools in Maryland, and for their elementary and middle schools. So we just did that last week, and they were very appreciative of that because they needed some help, and we had the ability to provide them with some help at that time.
Well, that's outstanding. If you just joined us, a Disaster Recovery Hour, I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Every Tuesday between 1 and 2, WVNJ, 1160 AM, the voice here in Teaneck, booming out of Oakland. On the phone today with me is Jeremy Gruber. He's calling in from the D.C. area, Montgomery County area. Jeremy, tell me where I met you was at the firehouse. Tell me a little bit about it's now converted into a restaurant. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's a 100-year-old firehouse that used to be a National Guard armory back in 1910. And then in 1915, they banded together and started the first firehouse of Montgomery County, which is exactly a half mile outside of D.C. because of a fire that occurred. And then in 2006, the fire department built a new station across the street, and the firehouse went up for sale. And I had worked at that firehouse off and on for over 20 years, and that's where I started my career in Montgomery County. Mm. And I became the lucky bidder to buy the firehouse and turn it into Fire Station 1 Restaurant and Brewing Company, which is about a 280-seat restaurant, a full-service restaurant with a really unique interior and great food. And it's been seems to be very popular in the area.
Yeah, no, it's a great concept. we enjoyed that, made the drive coming from Jersey down to D.C. That more enjoyable, you know, stopping and having our meeting there. Rescue One, one of the things that I think about is during this hurricane, okay, first responders are so overwhelmed that, there were some people, have older people, didn't get assistance, and, you know, some people wanted to cardiac arrest, and some unfortunately passed. So having that knowledge, it's kind of twofold there, because, you know, it's actually good to have, but you know what? And we've been talking about this for over a year now. First responders are not always going to be there. You need to be, sustain some kind of time frame for yourself and having
sure.
this knowledge, right?
Yeah, I mean, in this area, in the metropolitan areas of New York and Washington, when a disaster strikes, I mean, you just don't know how long it's going to take for someone to come to you, and the time delay because of water, snow, or an earthquake or flood, really enhances the ability for people to want to have the information. So if they were caught short without being able to get professionals on the scene in a timely fashion, they'd be able to provide some type of care while help was being sought. And that's very evident here in the last couple of weeks. We've had flooding here and a hurricane and an earthquake that definitely woke a lot of people up, because it was a lot going on, and people did lose their lives, and there was damage from the earthquake, and there was a lot of flooding that took lives, and it just was one of those times where having knowledge and being prepared certainly did make a difference for some people.
Yeah, and it's that's the driving force for the show is getting that word out, and like, you know, there is property preparedness, and and also talking to you, we talk about it a lot, is going down to the local fire department and just introducing yourself, because then guys are riding around, they remember the houses. I'm not telling you, you did it for so long, and I'm just I'm a viewer of that, and they advocate, get down and make sure you're known in it throughout your department. Like, listen, I live up on this street, I have two kids. Yeah, that information is so important, because your response time and navigating inside a building and not really knowing the landscape is crucial, right?
It's always good to have a relationship, and if you do have buildings that are unique, to have the fire department come out and take a look at it, so they're not surprised or looking at it for the first time when you have a disaster or some type of emergency, and they have some awareness of what your facility looks like and what you might keep in there, and actually how the facility lays out. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm you know, there's that back in the day you had the sticker on the window, I guess, with the for a child's bedroom, most important part for safety purposes. Rescue One, Bill's gonna, like I said, gonna have it up on the website. We're gonna go to a break in a couple seconds. When we come back, Jeremy, I had asked you the question. I hope you're still good with it. Was just to touch a little bit on 9/11 and your experience with down there, and because you were still on the job at the time.
That's correct. Yeah.
And we can we'll shoot for a break and be right back.
Disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 25 years of experience in emergency management and restoration, their seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition. Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next? Fire, smoke, water, or mold. CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, they've got answers. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
I know it's tough to hear me with this firefighter's air pack on, but it's the only way I can be in this smoldering pile of ashes that was my office. And I could get in trouble, but I hope you won't make the same mistake I did, since at least one in four businesses that suffer this type of loss never reopen. So here goes. Just 3 days ago, we sat in this melted wreck of what used to be a conference room, talking about how good things were. Over there was the tech room. The fire's bad enough, but the water damage really gets me. Look, here's an article describing us as visionaries. I should have done our disaster plan, but with everything else, I just didn't see this coming. Visionaries, huh? Well, the good news is, at least the ashes can't burn down.
There'll always be a few fires to put out around the office, unless it's not around anymore. But when you have a disaster plan, you can adapt, recover, and stay in control. Go to Ready.gov and make your company's plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kate Valentine of the Kate Valentine UFO Show. Thank you for joining us on our journey for answers. We are traveling to you on the radio waves, the internet, and by podcasts.
Kate Valentine's UFO Show. Watching strange visitors that come and go.
The UFO Show with Kate Valentine, Friday afternoons at 1 on WVNJ.
Thank you to our sponsors who have supported the show and our journey for answers.
We're back. Welcome. Disaster Recovery Hour. WVNJ 1160 AM. The voice on the phone today is my guest, Jerry Gruber. Jerry works at Rescue One. I think, Jerry, what is your actual title there?
I'm actually the founder of Rescue One. That's what I thought. Training for Life Incorporated.
I was just trying to navigate something on the website. I think people definitely need to go to the website. It says implementing AED programs and with Rescue One is an easy process. Yeah, I mean, you could do this remotely too, right? I mean, people up here.
Well, we do it nationwide.
Okay.
And we have a lot of clients in the New York area and New York City. So we are up there taking care of and servicing clients in that area.
Okay, good. Well, so there is no boundaries, no borders for you.
No.
I do. You know what? I just need to comment on something that people I talked about in my first segment. A little information I got this morning called the 112. And Leslie, you're welcome. But I did get rebutted from Gordon. Gordon tells me that he Googled 112. Excuse me, and he said 911 is still the best safety bet. Jer, what I was talking about. I got some information this morning regarding someone getting pulled over by an unmarked car. So it was part of it's like a PSA announcement at the beginning of the show. So didn't mean to deviate.
Oh, no problem.
One of the things that I would like to, you know, your take on it. Up here at 9/11, it was civilians, and first responders down at the trades down at the trade centers. And but you know, we as the New York area, you know, we're focused on downtown. And now with your perspective on the Pentagon, it's a government building. It's a different type of mentality. At least, I mean, from you're always a target, you know. The D.C. area is always a target because of a government and the officials. When that happened, you were sent down to the Pentagon and did what?
I was actually in paramedic recertification that morning when everything started to happen, and we dispatched units from Montgomery County to assist in the operation. And midday, troops had been through a lot, and they replaced the crews. So I was one of the replacement crews that went in. So I went in the afternoon and spent about 18 hours on a ladder truck flowing water into the Pentagon, and actually went into the Pentagon and did some reconnaissance and did some work inside the crash area. So most of it was, like I said, doing external firefighting, and then some of it was doing internal reconnaissance.
Now, the planes hit the towers, so that info was already down in D.C. before you guys get hit. Was there a state of emergency being implemented at that time?
Well, I think, you know, initially with the one plane, it was like, you know, what's going on? And then getting information coming in that more things were happening did put things into, a state of emergency would be appropriate, put everyone into high alert, and then... you know, you didn't know what was coming next at that point. So people were readying and scurrying, getting equipment and putting things together for whatever might happen, and then finally putting resources in places where they needed to be to make sure everything was being taken care of.
And civilian-wise, I mean, majority of the people in the D.C. area, is there a percentage of people that work for or, like, subcontracted to the government?
You know, Chris, I'm not sure what that percentage is, but it is a high number of people. This is an area, obviously, with many federal agencies and a lot of government employees. So the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area, and even parts of West Virginia and Pennsylvania have commuters coming into the Washington metropolitan area for federal business every day, especially with the Navy Med, the hospitals, and NIH and Health and Human Services and all the seats of the different agencies being pretty much surrounding and in the Washington, D.C. area.
What was the time frame of kind of getting back to business? Obviously more heightened business, that's for sure. What the turnaround time in the city where people were, okay, coming back to work?
Yeah, in some instances it was immediate just because of the type of services that were being provided. In others it was days. It just depended on the organization and where you were located. So, you know, within a few days a lot of everything was pretty much back up, but obviously there were certain things that were still needing time because of their location and restrictions that were in place. So there were different time frames for different types of venues and different types of groups.
I got a question from Mark for you. Might be mine for me or you, but it says, with earthquake, hurricane, and flooding, what a month for National Preparedness Month here in the Northeast, and I agree. He says, in your opinion, were the people more prepared recently, or is it a procrastination still a big problem? What do you see out there?
I think it's a combination of both. I think there are a lot of people that are, you know, taking and putting the message out there that, you know, we need to be prepared for a lot of different possibilities, and with the bringing up of Homeland Security and a lot of awareness being put out, I think there are people that are more aware today, and I think we are much better prepared. But there's, I think, still some room for improvement. But we've come a long way in 10 years, and I think there's still, you know, some ways to go, but there's been a lot put in place and a lot of awareness that's been brought to the forefront. And I think from that, you know, a lot of great things have happened to make people better prepared. But we're still learning, and we're still doing things to become even more prepared.
Then you see in the last 10 years, the public is now starting to embrace the private sector for assistance with this?
I think the private sector has been involved for a while within the government, using talents that they may need help and additional resources in. But I think every day there's more things in the private sector coming online, working with the public officials to make things more safe for everybody.
Yeah, it's and my buddy up here with the ACP Andy Weitzberg, president of ACP, that's the Association of Contingency Planners. They're starting to get more of ex-guys like yourself who are now in the private sector, OEM guys, and trying to get some guys said the old guard to think outside the box and bring in private business to consult. And most of the guys on the private side have already come from the public side, so it makes it a smoother transition, if you will. Just like, you know, obviously, just like with you with Rescue One, you're talking about boots on the ground experience. So it's not just somebody regurgitating something. There's real life experience when you are doing your experienced teams and with you, and you're doing your demonstrations and things like that. It's it gives a lot more value to it. No,
I agree. I mean, actually, I'm here. I'm calling you from one of the sites that we're working with right now. Just inside the Beltway, that is doing a mass evacuation drill next week, and they've asked us to come in and help them evaluate it and provide training and work with them on beefing up their program. And they're right in the heart of federal land, and they had this prepared, this drill on the books already, but it's even taken more forefront on everybody's mind because of the recent earthquake and hurricane. So they are certainly aware and heightened state of awareness now because of the things that have happened. But I think they were doing it anyway, but it just brings more emphasis on what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, it's like I said it before, maybe there is a little silver lining when it comes to these the earthquakes and the hurricanes about re-emphasizing where you're prepared and what can you learn from the experience. Jared, I appreciate you coming on, spending the time, and like you just said, you're on the job doing some training. Jeremy's website's going to be on our website, so you can just click and go over and check out Rescue One. And also, there's a link to the restaurant. Anyone traveling down to D.C. should check it out. It's a very cool spot to hang out, get some good eats, and have an adult beverage or a kiddie beverage, whichever one you want to do. But Jared, thanks a bunch. Anything that you come across that you think I need to get on the airwaves, just drop me a line and email. Go on the comments page. There'll probably be some comments that over the next week or so with people who podcast the show. They listen, and then they'll say, like, Jeremy, what do you think about this? And take a peek, like, next week. It's easy to go onto the drhradio.net website, and you can comment yourself right directly to them. So,
okay.
All right, brother. I appreciate the time. And, again, anything you want me to say, just reach out for me and enjoy the rest of the day if you can.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. And like you said, if anyone has any questions, feel free to reach out to us, and we'll be happy to help them out. And I appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. That's from the horse's mouth, if you will, being a 20-some-odd year veteran in the fire department, experienced the 9/11, unfortunately. But the Rescue One thing is very it's a necessity. I know people there is a stat out there. I don't know it, and if someone's out there listening about people who die from not getting the proper medical treatment in a certain period of time. Is critical. I know we've talked about mass incidences, like people. Unfortunately, it's been a lot lately. Last couple of years of shooter incidences. The first responders are getting the wounded, but there's a time frame of people who actually die because they can't get to them because they're still in the lockdown phase. So it's again, public and private sector getting together. That's the best thing. You know, the government just can't run everything, and we need the private industry to assist them and take a little less control from them, take some control from them. But we're gonna roll right into that. That kind of segues perfect into my guest, Jerry. You there, Jerry Giesinger?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
How's the weather down in Memphis?
Weather is typical Memphis, low to mid-80s, although we are probably into one of our finer two seasons of the year, spring or fall.
Okay. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the show with Jerry Gruber, who was a fireman down in Montgomery County for 20-some-odd years and then went over to the Pentagon. I haven't talked to Jerry in, I think it's about a month. He hasn't been on the show, and I wanted to get Jerry's Service Master, which I am very, very happy to be part of the Service Master franchise family. I met Jerry down. Everybody knows who Jerry is, but I'll reiterate. Jerry's a Disaster Academy director down there with him at the and Pete Duncanson. and I knew a lot of things, but my skills were honed, and it was an eye-opening experience, with needless to say, and I've applied those new lessons with our hurricane up here, Jared. It's been I've been able to navigate, and because, you know, with hurricanes, everybody comes in and, you know, they think it's dollar signs and, you know, let's just attack and, you know, but a lot of these guys are just coming in and ripping things out and not safing the property and things like that. But some of the knowledge I've grabbed, I've been able to sharpen my skills, if you will.
Well, you were a quick study, Chris.
That's another $10 I owe you. Jeremy was down at the Pentagon, and you, I'm going to talk about Service Master. Yes, it is a plug, but Jerry is a good friend of mine now, and I was downtown. I worked for a company, a very large restoration company here in the New York City area. The owner of the company, Damon, is a good friend still. He taught me a lot. But I worked downtown, and, you know, it was, you and I talked about, you know, it's almost like a patriotic thing. You know, you want to help your fellow American get through these bad times. So tell me the sequence of events that happened. I mean, the Pentagon came to Service Master because it's valued, it's trusted, it's they got recognition, they got resources. So tell me how that played out.
Well, I think everybody can recall. Somebody put it in perspective to me the other day as we observed the 10th anniversary of 9/11. They said you probably can't remember where you were the day before and what you were doing on the 10th, but I think we all remember where we were on September 11th, and it's certainly clear to me where I was coming to work early in the morning and getting the news of it, and then we just started following it as to what the progression of events were going on. And here at the corporate offices, we were contacted by our franchisee, one of the local franchisees in the Washington, D.C. area, who prior to this had been involved in doing quite a bit of work for the Pentagon, actually for the White House, had done some cleaning over the time, the normal type cleaning and mm-hmm. some special request things,
right.
And came to us with this. And so corporately, we sat here at the offices and put a game plan together as to what we would do. And myself and another gentleman were asked to spearhead for the cleanup of the Pentagon, and so we left that particular evening of September 11th and drove through the night to Washington, got there the next morning, and were greeted by the local franchisee who had made the initial mm-hmm. contact, and we immediately started to mobilize and started to put our game plan together as to what we were going to do and how we were going to handle it, and mm-hmm. start calling in some of our resources nationwide. Mm-hmm.
Let's cut just for a second. I get the old thumbs up of a commercial break, okay. And paying bills, but pick it up on day one. Be right back.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated. a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster never reopen. Is affected by a disaster, whether it's man-made or natural, never reopen. Yet far too many business owners put off their company's disaster.
You have five.
Can you sign it for me, please?
Don't forget those copies for the presentation.
Disaster plan because they let too many day-to-day things get in the way.
Is that 3 p.m. going to be all right with your schedule?
Hey, don't forget that Stanton proposes due.
Be in the conference room in 5 minutes, please.
To save your messages, press 1.
Receive dispatch. Truck 47 en route to 614 North Front Street.
Received. Be advised, truck 47. Heavy fire showing from the 9th floor. Second alarm being dispatched at this time.
Disasters are unpredictable. But when you have a plan in place, you can better adapt, recover, and stay in control. So don't wait. Visit ready.gov to make your company's disaster plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Hey, here we are again, winding it down, but more importantly, getting back to my good friend Jerry and my guru down at the academy. Jerry, so it's day one. Boots on the ground, if you will, for a soldier's type of mentality. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. Well, that was, as I said, when we arrived, it was probably late morning, the old gentleman and I, and we were greeted by our local franchisee who had already set up shop, if you will, outside. In other words, we didn't have a command center in place yet, but they were there actually taking a break from a little bit of work they'd done. So our first focus was to meet with our contact people from the Pentagon and start to put together the game plan that we were going to use to proceed. And of course, I'm sure all of your listeners can understand that even on a good day, working with the government and procurement and taxing and can be somewhat of a monumental task. And now you roll into the mix that we, for all practical purposes, were at war. We were everybody was under that duress and stress. You don't just get to walk freely through buildings like the Pentagon, and that was really my primary focus there, was to deal with the security issues, because regardless of what we were capable of doing production-wise and recovery-wise, the biggest task for us was going to be able to get our 300 people, which we anticipated at one time we would have working and crawling the halls of the Pentagon, involved there. So getting security clearances, which in my background from a previous time as a franchise owner, I had services provided on an annual basis, actually for about 9 to 10 years for an Air Force base. So I was very familiar with the security issues and how to deal with those. Typically, we had to get clearance for all of our people coming in. So that was one of the first things we really started to roll. And also, of course, to do the job scoping on it to make sure where we were at. And then start setting up. And our command center, Chris, was actually set up in one of the parking lots outside the Pentagon that had been used by contractors that were recently doing remodeling in the Pentagon prior to that. And that's actually the impact area was one of the newly remodeled areas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was one that, and that's the reason why, and as you've heard stories, they talked about the unfortunate death toll there would have been higher because it had not been reoccupied fully yet in that area.
Wow, that's intelligent.
So the different rings of the Pentagon, for those that are familiar with it, there are five rings and many miles of hallways. One of the issues we came across, and I'm just kind of going on here, but one of the issues we came across was when we brought in 35 to 40 businesses that came in representing ServiceMaster from across the country, and they brought their people in. We had to first get them security clearance, and you had to get escorts, or you had to get status, security status to get in, then you had to have escort status, and the way it was typically set up was that for every five people you had to have an escort, and one of those escorts, that escort status individual had to be constantly in contact with a military person who had to be overseeing those five people.
Wow.
As they were in the corridor. So that really created some logistics issues. And of course, for the technicians that were in there, having to work around somebody standing with an M16 standing next to them is somewhat of a traumatic situation in itself. So there was a lot of issues in working that particular loss, which, as you can imagine, was not one that that you run across every day.
Right. Yeah, we would... We get staged, and my section was in Battery Park City, and we would walk 25 to 35 people at a clip from one station, from one checkpoint to another, and literally we didn't start really working. I mean, at least for the first month of getting that logistics, again, what you talked about, my memory serves me correct, is you know, didn't get working till about, you know, mid to late morning because of just the amount of people that need to be looked at and gone through, and you know, all the bags stay out of the buildings, and
that's,
you know,
right.
You have your badge that you went to the tent down there on Chambers Street, and they ran your background, and they gave you a badge if you were, you know, thank God, you know, a lot of contractors went through that and didn't get in trouble, whatever.
Well, I was a liaison for the lieutenant colonel that was running the security in the Pentagon, and I could just see him squeamish every once in a while because this was not protocol, this was not the normal way to do things, and so they were trying to balance the fact that they knew that security was a big issue and they wanted to do it right, but yet they also knew the urgency of moving forward with the recovery of the Pentagon. So you know, there was some balance that had to be done, but we brought in about 80 people, 80 to 100 people at a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, as they walked up to clear the gate, that did take some time, and so your productivity was fairly minimal during the day. You just didn't get a lot of time to be very productive with it.
Yeah, and it and you know, there's the first couple of days, and then the first couple of weeks, and then you know, it gets into normalcy, and then the I want my, you know, the civilians for my side, because you were on the military side, but for civilians, it's, you know, what about me? You know, get my stuff. So it's really, then there's that whole pie of I think Steve Commando talked about it. He was an FBI profiler guy. He was on the show about being a victim, and then these stages you go through. So then it comes into that anger stage of, you know, God bless it, I want to be back to normal, I want my stuff taken care of, I want to be abated, I want to be clean and stuff like that. So
yeah.
And you know, you're sympathetic, you have to be, you know.
The experience we had at the Pentagon, the cleanup, was that the military, both military and the civilian folks that worked there, were just tremendously appreciative of the work that was done, and we received many accolades for the service provided. They were very patient in their areas. We of course had to go we responded to those particular areas that seemed to that called for it first, and whether it be a priority because of rank and file or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We responded to those accordingly, but literally serviced the entire Pentagon area except for those areas. As we marched down each corridor, there was somebody there that had a restricted area, and as we got closer to the impact area, we did not participate in that impact area at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was the balance of the structure that we were working in, but yeah, it turned out very well at the end, but it was a monumental task, no question about it.
Yeah. Well, anybody wants to go to the site, Bill has put up the video of the Pentagon from Service Master on the comments page, excuse me. That's drhradio.net. And Jerry, you're in there looking younger with a mustache. I had to give you a little dig on that one the other night when I saw that.
Yeah, that went off, I don't know how long after that, Chris, but I thought as though no man should walk around with 32-year-old hair on his face, so that was the reason it came down.
You know what, was the entire building, I mean, it's the largest building in the world. So
yes.
did you clean every place? I mean, where you were able to get to, did you clean the entire building?
Yes. It basically, I think the corridor, if I recall my numbers right, there's about 17 miles worth of corridors in the in the Pentagon, and we touched all facets of that building, even if we didn't physically touch it by cleaning it. We had odor issues, and mm-hmm. and so we had AFDs in there. So we had responsibility for basically the entire, in one way, shape, form, or the other.
Yeah.
When we went through it. You understand that on a good day, the Pentagon is one of those pristine places and maintained. The
right.
expectation was that we'd go back to that. And of course, we had some areas, the executive areas of the different branches, that had to have a special attention paid to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was some of that, even presumption that there was some issues there that we dealt with it. And the project ran on for a couple of months
mm-hmm. right.
when we were done with it. But I will tell you that probably the most, one of the more positive things about it too was just the technician level of the folks that were there. You started this out session out by talking about the pride issue. I will tell you that every technician that came out of there, in some way, shape, form, or the other, had felt as though that they had served their country. Yeah. In some way.
Yeah, I it's an unfortunate thing that it happened, but I'm glad I was able to help. And if I was, I think I made some lifelong friends being downtown. Some of the civilians, and some of the law enforcement guys that we got to hang out with, and some of the fire department guys. Jer, I appreciate it, but you know what? I'm sorry. Just a quick question is, did we take any of that to apply to the SRMs? SRMs stands, that's the mass mobile units that the service yes. master has, that we actually was at the Willowbrook Mall out here in Wayne, in Passaic County. Did you take some of those lessons there and try to?
Sure.
Yeah, you did.
That's the basis for the SRM, is the mobilization issue, the ability to respond and the ability to put in place some logistical operations, things that move quick, that allow you to move quickly. Mm-hmm. And effectively in large loss situations.
Yeah. Jer, always a pleasure. Tell the guys down there I said hello. The mad professor back there, Barry, with the with his chemicals and whatnot.
Hey, Barry Elegant. Yeah.
And be well, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks, some, see what's happening out there in the world. If you and I can have a chat, teach some people some things, and move forward.
Would love to.
Thanks, Jer. Take care of yourself.
Take care, Chris.
Peace out. Bye-bye. That was Jeremy Gruber, first time, and Jerry Giesinger, the third or fourth time, something like that. Service Master Disaster Academy down there. Like I said, I am part of it. You hear my commercials. It's the CPP, Emergency Services and Restoration, and I'm part of the Service Master. We'll be tinkering possibly with that in the future. Minute to go in the show. To recap with Gordon. Gordon, I want to talk about that 2-1. It's 112 is what this intel I got. Not 211. Gordon, I appreciate the heads up. And listen, if you got the information you think I need to have, go ahead, bro. Give it to me. I'm okay with that. Disaster Recovery Hour every Tuesday between 1 and 2. WVNJ 1160 AM, The Voice. Last but not least, Disaster with a War, bring home our troops. This is ridiculous. God bless our country, and to all the family members that with 9/11, my heart goes out, and God bless. Take care of yourselves. Take care.